This episode contains graphic descriptions of crime scenes, which may be disturbing to some listeners.
In this multi-part episode, we're bringing you the story of two young girls who in 1974 are enjoying the carefree days of summer in the beautiful Florida Keys when they suddenly vanish. Where did they go? Did they run away? Were they abducted? There are many theories of what might have happened, but after 50 years, we're still searching for the girls who went missing in the Keys.
This is APB Cold Case. Here's your host, former police chief Mark Spahn.
This is the story about 16-year-old Cindy Gooding and 12-year-old Terry Alfonso, two girls from large blended families, both experiencing not only the difficulty and stress that goes along with divorce, but the normal challenges faced by every teenager. The bottom line is, these girls are missing. But their story is a complex web of reports, sometimes contradictory, of memories sometimes faded, and of locations that have changed dramatically over time. We'll hear from family members, friends, classmates, and locals. We'll be talking about a large transient workforce, shady characters, career criminals, and known serial killers, some with a direct connection to the Florida Keys, and others whose MOs are similar to the circumstances of our missing girls. Now, all persons are presumed innocent. We're not alleging that any of the people we'll be talking about are official suspects or persons of interest. In fact, that has been the elusive question for 50 years. And as you'll hear, there are a number of possibilities, as well as some controversies. There's a lot to unpack here, and believe me, you don't want to miss a thing. Check out our show notes right now to help you follow along. We've got photos, a who's who, a timeline, and maps where we'll call out location numbers if you want a visual reference. You can find all of this and more on our website at apbcoldcase.com. Part one of our story begins in September 1974 in Marathon, Florida. Marathon is a city nestled in the middle of the Florida Keys, about an hour's drive from Key West. It's a 10-mile-long community made up of 13 islands. We spoke with several locals to get a feel for Marathon in the 70s, including longtime resident Patty Bercier.
You know, it's just nice and quiet. Very low-key. Obviously, it's different now. So as a kid, you can go anywhere and not really worry about anything. You know, everybody knew everybody.
Another former local we'll call Barb lived there as a teen.
Marathon in the 70s was extremely different than what it is now. You had a lot of working families and, you know, tourism really wasn't that big at that time. That didn't explode until, you know, later on in the 80s. There were a lot of people that were coming from all over. There were also a lot of transient people.
It's around Labor Day, so traffic on US 1, which runs down the center of Marathon, is probably a bit busier than usual from people passing through to Key West. That evening, 16-year-old Cindy Gooding is hanging out with her friend Darlene, Darlene's 12-year-old sister, Terry, and a few other friends and acquaintances at a rented residential trailer on 74th Street. Darlene tells us about that day.
We all met there. We were all sitting, I remember, in the living room, sitting on the floor, talking and stuff. And then Cindy said, I'm going to leave. And I said, well, where are you going? And I don't remember what she said, to tell you the truth. And then Terry says, well, I'm going with her. And then they left.
That's the last time Darlene ever saw the girls. Now, I think it's important to give you some background information. In researching this story, the girls' names and the spelling of their names was not always reported in a consistent manner. So, for clarity, we'll refer to them as Cindy and Terry. We're going to start by talking about their individual situations because they're pertinent to the story. And I want to point out that these two girls weren't necessarily friends. They didn't normally hang out together, but they certainly knew one another through Darlene, who was both the sister of Terry and a friend of Cindy's. Now, let's learn more about the girls. 16-year-old Cindy Gooding is the youngest of four children and the only girl born to Wayne and Doris Gooding, who would later divorce. Cindy's mom remarried and had two more children. Here's Cindy's younger half-sister, Diane.
My mother was a hairstylist that owned her own salon. So Cindy was always beautiful. Always. As growing up, she helped my mom in the salon, sweep hair, answer phones, wash hair. She was wanting to do her own thing, from what I remember. We are 8 years and one day apart. And I was actually born the day after her 8th birthday. So I was her baby doll. And I just remember her being very loving to me all the time. That's the few memories I have of her. Very loving.
Diane told me about Cindy's sense of style.
Hip huggers, bell bottoms. She was a little girl, and she was always what the fashion was then. I remember her in hip huggers. And I remember her hip bones. You know, I remember thinking, when I grow up, I'm going to be just like her. I'm not. but also drugs was a thing. Cindy and the three older brothers are from my mother's first marriage to Wayne Gooding, who was a deep sea fisherman. The three older brothers lived in Marathon with him and fished with him. Cindy lived up here in Virginia with my mom and my dad and me and my little brother. And my father was not a perfect stepfather. You know, he was ex-Navy or retired Navy. Yeah, he was a chief, so sailors need to do. He had a different attitude, let's just say that. And Cindy did run away quite a few times, I believe, at least 3 or 4. She was into things she shouldn't have been into. So everything I've always heard, it was a strained, very strained relationship.
Diane said her dad always treated his stepchildren like they were Navy sailors.
Get in line. What are you doing? No. And, you know, he was very blunt. And I'm going to say to the point of abusive. I don't care who knows that. That's why she did what she did in the runaway situations and trying to get away from the house. He was ready for them to go be with their father. He had his family. That isn't easy for me to say, but it is what it is. Lying or covering up for that or trying to make that unimportant isn't going to happen. The point blank issues, it makes the story very unbelievable and kind of not make sense. Now it makes sense.
Cindy's brother has the same memories of his stepfather and Cindy wanting to get away from him, but he told me he's made peace with that now.
They had a nice life up in Virginia. He didn't have to be so mean. He'd give you an ass whipping for nothing. If he didn't have a good excuse to give you an ass whipping, he'd think of one. Okay, that's the man he was. He apologized to me on his deathbed. I accepted his apology. Great spit of tears. I do forgive him for everything he's ever done to me. Okay. I forgave him that day. But he broke up our home. She moved out of the house in Virginia and came to Florida to live with her dad.
Cindy had a trip planned to go to Florida, and she may have been thrilled to get away from her drill sergeant stepfather, but her mother didn't like the fact that in Marathon, her father and brothers were often away from home for days at a time on deep-sea fishing trips, and her main concern was that Cindy would be left alone.
My mother was very uncomfortable with her father being gone so much. And I remember her and my mother in the car, and my mother was crying and she was crying. And it might have been that hard discussion. I don't know what the talk was about. But it was before she went, and it very well was maybe conversation about her wanting to stay, maybe conversation of behaving while she's there, I don't know what it was about, but that is one memory that I have before she left. And that's the only one.
So in the summer of 1974, Cindy Gooding traveled to Florida to stay with her biological father and her three older brothers. She'd visited Marathon before, but this trip was shaping up to be more of a permanent one. Once in Marathon, Cindy made friends easily. One of those friends was Darlene.
I really don't remember how I met Cindy. It must have been through friends or something, and we just kind of hit it off. I know she lived with her father, that she had come. I think she came from somewhere, wherever her mother lived.
Now let's talk about 12-year-old Terry Alfonso. Terry was born in 1961 to Mercedes Cruz and Juvenad Alfonso. Their relationship did not last. Terry had been living with her mother and sisters in Marathon until a few months before her disappearance. At that time, Mercedes was going through another breakup, this time with her then-husband, Dr. Riggs, who was a dentist in town.
Dr. Riggs left my mom, and we had to move out of his home that he had. I think it was 92nd Street. Yeah, 92nd Street. My mom, you know, she was going through a lot, so her life was a mess.
The family was in flux. So 12-year-old Terry was sent to live with her biological father in Miami, and 14-year-old Darlene moved into the Jerry Dale Motel, which was like an efficiency apartment, until their mom, Mercedes, could get back on her feet. Now, we don't know the exact date, but either at the end of August or the first day or two of September 1974, Terry had returned to Marathon for a visit, and she was staying with Darlene at the Jerry Dale, which is location number one on our map.
My mom rented, it was on 91st Street. It was called the Jerry Dale. And she rented us a little efficiency there. My mom didn't stay with us there. It was me, another girl, Angela, and Terry had come to visit that weekend. Terry, I think she was 12 at that time. She looked older than what she was. She looked older than me. I always looked I was very petite and little. And she just jeans, t-shirt. She liked wearing platform shoes. I remember that. She had straight hair, just parted in the middle, straight down. Very pretty girl.
The family was going through a tough time, but trying to make the best of it.
I did a lot of working. I was working as a maid back then. The girl that I was friends with, Angela, we worked both at Indy's Inn as a maid. And I was very young, but I had to work. And I worked as a maid during the day. On nights that I didn't go to night school, I worked at the movie theater.
So now that you have the basic background, I want to quickly describe the geography of the area because it's also important to the story. If you're not familiar, the Keys are a string of tropical islands dividing the Atlantic Ocean from the Gulf of Mexico. US 1, also known as the Overseas Highway, is the only road in and out, and it connects the Keys to the mainland. Our focus will mostly center around Marathon, which again is situated in the middle of the Keys. And really, Marathon is a central character to our story. A former resident, Sharon, remembers what it was like in the 70s.
But there was just a naivety and just a carefree walking on the beach and the sand, palm trees. You just don't think that there's anything dangerous down there, but there definitely was. We came across people that were just absolutely nuts. We coined the phrase the island of misfit toys because people that didn't belong anywhere gravitated down there because it was very cheap living. It was way down out of the way. If you were trying to get lost, it was a place to go because nobody could ever find you down there.
Now that you know a little bit about Cindy, Terry, and Marathon, Florida, we're going to retrace the girls' last movements as we know them. You're about to embark on a roller coaster ride of information with twists and turns and a few jaw-dropping moments. We're talking about events that happened 50 years ago, And the details you're about to hear come from police reports, old news articles, and recollections from family and friends. But before we even step into their last movements, we need to talk about one of the biggest controversies in this case, the date they went missing. Reports range anywhere from August 20th to September 3rd, 1974. Most of the people we spoke with don't have a specific memory of the exact day or date as much as they do a general time frame. But the bottom line is, Terry and Cindy are missing, and they disappeared within a period of a week or so before Labor Day. Terry's sister Darlene takes us back to that summer. Again, it's late August to early September 1974.
From what I remember, my friend Angela was dating this guy, and they had a trailer on 74th Street, a couple trailers down from where the Dairy Queen used to be, which is the main highway there. So if you go down 74th, the trailer was on the right-hand side. It's a little tiny, I remember being a small trailer. And they were renting that trailer. They didn't own it, they were renting. And my sister Cindy and her friend Wren lived down that same street, and they knew these guys. Everybody met there. So me, Terry, Cindy Gooding, Angela, my sister Cindy, and her roommate Wren, we all met there, and we were all just there, you know, doing whatever.
I want to clarify, there were two Cindys at the mobile home trailer that night. Darlene's talking about her friend, Cindy Gooding, and her older sister, who she refers to as my sister Cindy. The trailer is location number 2 in our online map. Again, here's Darlene.
They were passing drugs in that house at that night. And I think at that time, that's when they got up and left. From what I remember, we got there early evening, and Cindy and Terry weren't, from what I can remember, we weren't there not even a couple hours, or they weren't even there a couple hours. And we were all sitting, I remember, in the living room, sitting on the floor talking and stuff. And then Cindy said, I'm going to leave. And I said, well, where are you going? And I don't remember what she said, to tell you the truth. And then Terry says, well, I'm going with her, and why don't you come with us? And I'm like, no, I don't want to go. And then they left. Now, the two guys that were there, and I don't remember their names. I had never met them before. That was the first time I ever met them. The one of the guys said, oh, do you think they need a ride? And I said, yeah, they probably need, you know, can use a ride. And he left. And I don't know what happened after that. Now, with Cindy Gooding, I always thought, well, I wonder if she took some of their drugs or something, you know, just took it with her. And maybe they got up. Maybe that's why that guy asked if they needed a ride and got upset. I don't know. It's so hard to remember the time limits, but it seemed maybe a couple hours that he came back. And I left not too long after that.
When Darlene walked out the front door of the trailer, there was a light-colored panel van parked out front. She couldn't quite put her finger on it, but there was something about that man and his van that didn't feel quite right.
I remember leaving and I got that weird feeling, I don't know why, but of looking in the van, and I didn't because I got scared. I don't know why that came over me. I don't know. It was just that feeling I got. I just got scared. I got scared they were looking out the window, or I don't know. It was just the weirdest, strangest thing. And I regret to this day that I never looked in there.
Darlene still remembers some of the details of that van.
Closed sides, and it had windows in the back. Yeah, and I think, from what I can remember, it was white.
Darlene thinks that whoever was renting the trailer was the same person who drove the van. I wanted to know more about those two unnamed men that were with them in the trailer that day.
I don't know. I never met them before. I didn't know anything about them. My sister Cindy, I knew them better, And I've asked her and asked her throughout the years, do you remember their names? Do you know anything about them? And she keeps telling me no. So I don't know who they are. Or the girl that I was friends with, Angela, she was dating one of them, but I don't even remember her last name.
So we don't know who those men are, and we don't know why 16-year-old Cindy and 12-year-old Terry suddenly got up and left the trailer. But Darlene said they agreed to meet up later that night. One report said they would meet at a Lum's restaurant. Another suggested the Oasis Bar. If not those locations, they should have at least eventually returned to Darlene's place. But Cindy and Terry never come back to the apartment. Darlene's not initially concerned because she thinks maybe they're just off somewhere having fun. But the next morning, when she finds Terry's wallet with all of her belongings at the Jerrydale, well, now she's getting nervous.
She didn't take her purse with her. I don't remember she had left her purse here prior to going with us to that mobile home, or they did go there and then something happened. She didn't take her purse, so I knew something was wrong.
She thought back to the previous night and that uneasy feeling she had.
And I didn't look in the van. I don't know why I got that feeling, but that's always haunted me from that day. You know, I should have looked in that van.
Coming up in part two of Missing in the Keys. Two young girls have vanished. What happened after they left that trailer?
That night, she was had an argument with her boyfriend, and they were breaking up. So I don't know what happened then.
Did they have a plan to meet up with someone?
I'm just wondering how come the Oasis came up.
Or did something more sinister happen?
I don't know where Terry was that night. I still hear her crying.
That's in part two of Missing in the Keys. If you know any of the men renting the trailer on 74th Street in August or September 1974, or if you know Rin or Angela, they may have useful information for investigators. And if you or anyone you know has information about the disappearance of 12-year-old Terry Alfonso or 16-year-old Cindy Gooding from Marathon, Florida in 1974, call Crime Stoppers anonymously at 866-471-TIPS. Or go to crimestoppers305.com or call 1-800-THE-LOST. For age-progressed images of Cindy and Terry, historical photos of Marathon, a who's who of the people mentioned in this episode, timeline, maps, and more, go to apbcoldcase.com.
Thanks for listening to APB Cold Case. Tell us about your cold case at apbcoldcase@spawngroup.com. APB Cold Case is an original Spawn Group production.